9 o'clock. Thanks for hanging out with us, Jim and the Buckeye Boy. The Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network, 101.1 FM, 1340 AM in the Valley. North Fork Valley, Highway 50, 102.1 FM, and wherever you might be roaming. Go to our website, get our mobile app, stream us there at theteam1340.com.
We got a winner. It took some guessing, but we finally got a winner for Who Is It?
Okay.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the winner of the contest.
It's another winner on the Team Sports Network.
So, 31 teams have made the playoffs in the last 10 years, all but the Jets. Sorry, Jets fan, one of you out there. In the last 5 years, 30 different teams have made the playoffs, all but the Jets and the Broncos. This person played for both teams with the two longest droughts, won two Super Bowls with the Broncos. Trevor Price had a cup of coffee with the Jets. We had some good guests. Romanowski was in. Joe Flacco fits the bill, only has one Super Bowl win. Eric Decker fits the bill, only one Super Bowl win, though. Trevor Price got two with the original team. And he missed Elvis Dumervil by a year, both in Denver and in Baltimore.
Which you're referencing with the fax machine debacle.
Yes. So they didn't play together in either place, but they were played for both teams. But yes, we're looking for Trevor Price. Kit correctly identifying it. He's got a case of New Belgium headed his way.
All right. Well done, Kit. Well done, sir.
And thanks for all the pile for participating and hanging through my brain fart.
Absolutely. Thank you, Pyle, for doing that. All right, this weekend on Saturday at the Denver Marriott Tech Center, they'll have the Colorado Baseball Club Dugout Hall of Fame. And Byron Wiehe, longtime Mesa State baseball coach, will go into the Hall of Fame. Joe White, who I'm going to try to track down Joe so we can get Joe on tomorrow. Joe White, who pitched for Byron, will also go into the Hall on Saturday as well. Ray McLennan, Fruita Monument baseball coach, and now former Fruita coach, went into the Hall. And so Byron Wiehe will be inducted on Saturday. Had the chance to catch up with Byron, who's been back in Grand Junction for the last couple of years, lived over in Denver, and has been doing a lot of work out at Monument Little League with the fields, and also just working with coaches, some of the young coaches out there, to impart some of the knowledge that he has garnered over the course of his coaching career. Had a chance to catch up with former Mesa baseball coach, Mesa State baseball coach, Byron Wiehe. Byron Wiehe. Byron, it's a pleasure. How are you doing?
Doing fine. Doing fine.
Well, first off, congratulations, well-deserved, and I think long overdue, to be part of the Colorado Dugout Club's Hall of Fame. You'll go in to that class coming up here on the 22nd at the Denver Marriott Tech Center. But just your reaction to getting into the Colorado Dugout Club's Hall of Fame, where I know we've had Ray McLennan go in there recently, Joe White, who pitched for you, will be going in with you as well. And so this has to be just an exciting moment in terms of your being acknowledged for what an outstanding coach you were during your college career.
Well, thanks for those great words there. I think, it was a surprise. We were not anticipating it. But it's nice to be thought of that way. I think the biggest thing about it is going back, I get to see a lot of old coaches, ex-players. I used to go to the clinic about every year when I was coaching, and not just a pizza, but after that with some high school teams and coaches. And so it'll be fun to go back. It's a great experience. Young coaches to go and see the clinic and then go to the Hall of Fame banquet.
Byron Wiehe, former Mesa College baseball coach, joining us, the third longest tenure coach in Maverick baseball history. Chris Hanks holds that distinction with 23 years at the helm of the Maverick baseball program. Bus Bergman, who preceded you, Byron, with 21 years. And the fact that you were able to maintain the success of Bus Bergman, and eventually, of course, Chris Hanks, when Joe Giratano left, took over the reins after you stepped down. But to get the team to the NAIA postseason pretty much every year that you were the coach there speaks to the level of consistency that you're able to maintain as the Maverick skipper.
Well, the one thing that we were able to do is we could recruit good players. We had a great facility to play in. I had some really good coaches, good boosters, people who were really into making us successful. And, you know, your whole program is based on the ability to get quality players in. And I think all those times we were conference champions and district champions and went to the playoffs, those are all good memories and everything. But I think the biggest thing is having the relationship with these guys that over 500 kids, and I say kids, they're not kids anymore, but over 500 of them that dedicated themselves to the Maverick program. And, you know, coaches don't get these kinds of honors unless you have quality people that are playing for you and quality coaches that are helping you coach them. So I think the biggest thing that I enjoyed about it was after you're done and time passes, you see all these guys, particularly the ones that are around the Grand Valley that were former players, and see them out into the public with supporting really good jobs and being successful. That's what's important to me.
Byron Rehe, former Maverick baseball coach. He'll go into the Colorado Dugout Club Hall of Fame on January 22nd, joining us today on the Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network. And you had so many great players, and it's hard to list off all of them, Byron, but I'm sure a name that for many of us that have followed Maverick baseball for a long time, name that immediately jumps out is Randy Reddy, who continues to coach at the minor league level. Randy played professionally at the major league level. I believe spent some time in Japan as well, playing professional baseball there, and racked up a bunch of different records when he played for you. And just talk about Randy Reddy a little bit, because he's one of those guys you can be. You had produced a lot of major league players out of the program during your time there, but Randy Reddy was one of the really special ones.
Well, he was, and he was kind of a enigma in the fact that he was when he did play here his last season. He was hitting 520 or 519, leading the nation in hitting, and we were going into the final weekend of our district conference tournament, and the coaches and I were together thinking, I don't think he can maintain that consistency. He's got to have a slump, and it's just going to come at the wrong time. And lo and behold, it went like 4 for 5 and raised his batting average to 522 and ended up that year leading the nation in hitting, and then was signed by the Milwaukee Brewers, and the rest is history. I enjoy talking with him, and one of the things that I make him do is he comes back. I work and coach at the Monument Little League, and I bring him back to be a guest speaker to our young coaches that are learning the game. And he does an outstanding job as a clinician. And I just ended up talking to him the other night. Always a good person to be around baseball-wise.
Former Mesa baseball coach Byron Rehe joining us today on the Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network. Byron, along with his former pitcher Joe White, will go into the Colorado Dugout Club Hall of Fame on January 22nd. Byron, during his time there, 28 players that went on to play professional baseball, 12 NAIA All-Americans coming out of the Maverick program during Byron Weehee's tenure. And you mentioned that you moved back to town a couple of years ago, and you've been coaching your grandson's Little League team, been working over at Monument Little League. And that's, look, coaches, you just can't get out of your blood, right? I mean, especially when you got a grandchild involved, and you got to get out there. And I think the fact that you're helping young coaches learn from a guy like Randy Reddy and yourself, that's huge. I think that's incredible, Byron, the way you're giving back and helping some of those young coaches learn the right drills, the right practices, the right approach to coaching some of the young talent.
Well, one of the areas that I'm going to talk about in my speech at the induction is that these high school coaches, college coaches, it's our responsibility to get back to the game. And I think we're at a time where baseball, there's so many different sports that are coming to light, and baseball participation at the youth level is decreasing. And I think these coaches have to get out and do some mentoring to young coaches, as well as provide opportunities for them to learn basic fundamentals and not leave them to the internet to learn the game of baseball.
Byron Wehe joining us today on the Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network. I do want to talk about your career as a player, because you're a Colorado guy through and through. You played for Durango down the Four Corners area and started playing baseball when you were a little guy, about the same age when I started playing baseball, Byron. At the age of eight, you were an all-league pitcher at Durango. I had a great game against Delta where you struck out 19 in that game before you went on to play at Adams State, played baseball and basketball for now the Grizzlies, the Indians back in the day. But take us through your prep career a little bit, and the path that took you to Adams State to play, to be a two-sport athlete, which is nowadays almost practically unheard of at the college level.
Well, I was lucky. I had some really good coaches when I was young, and I was surrounded by a lot of good, dedicated players, and that's all we did. You know, we'd play a baseball game at 10 o'clock in the morning in the summertime in youth baseball, and we'd go home in the afternoon and get the guys together and play another 2 or 3 hours. And that's just the way it was back then. And fortunately, in high school, we had an excellent team and really good players in high school, but I think our notoriety came when we were playing Legion ball in the summertime. And being from a small town, to get to the state playoffs, Legion championship, we had to go through about 6 different tournaments and different cities, and ended up going to the state championship game against Aurora Hinckley. And that was something that we'll never forget. I was lucky enough to be the MVP of the tournament. But those are great memories. But the big thing is the guys that I played with, I've had a couple calls from former players that I played with back in high school and congratulating me. And that's nice. The two other people that are going into the Hall of Fame, Joe White, I was mentored by his dad, Willie White, my first years out of college, coaching baseball in Littleton. And then knew Joe when he was about 6 years old and ended up recruiting him. And the rest is history. He's an all-conference player and signed with the Mariners and won a couple state championships at Thunder Ridge. But I was lucky in the fact that when I was playing high school and playing against Delta, I had a really good game pitching-wise. And the president of the college, which is was a real sports pro sports person, happened to be at the game, but he was there recruiting a president, if you can believe this, is recruiting band members to build the band up, and happened to see the game. And after the game, offered me a scholarship. And so I ended up playing basketball and baseball for 4 years. And we had very good teams, and it was a great experience.
You would never hear that happening today. A university president at a game recruiting band members to start a band. You put together your best prep performance ever on the mound, 19 strikeouts, and he says, "Hey, how'd you like to come to Alamosa?" I mean, that would never happen these days, where John Marshall, Mesa's president, would be somewhere and offer a scholarship to somebody. I just think that's, you know, times have changed, but that was some of the neat stories, the amazing things back in that day. And And fortunately, right place, right time, him being there and you having that kind of performance, Byron.
Yeah, that's true. And don't count John Marshall out in doing that, because I've seen him at Monument Little League watching down the sidewalks there, wanting to know what field his little one's going to play on. So I'm going to corral him sometime at the park and talk baseball. And I know that he'll support baseball and all sports at Mesa like they have. And you talked a little bit earlier about Buss Bergman. It was kind of the evolution of the programs at Mesa, and the fact that we went from a junior college, a very successful junior college in baseball, and then I was lucky enough, Buss recruited me also out of high school to play baseball, but I was a little bit crazy and wanted to play basketball too, and should have just went the baseball route. But anyway, when Buss was getting ready to retire, I visited Mesa and talked to him. And that's when Wayne Nelson hired me to come from the Denver area to be an assistant football coach and just basketball, and then coach baseball. And I just barely made it, didn't go to the psych ward for spending coaching those three sports for two or three years. And then after that, was able to coach just baseball, and that's about all I could handle.
Now, see, you joined Buss and the staff. What was, did you coach Jamie Hamilton? Was Jamie, you were there when you started with Buss?
Yeah, Jamie ended his junior college year with Buss. I had to turn around and recruit those kids that were getting out of junior college to stay at Mesa, and Jamie was one of those. And then one of his best friends growing up in high school was Rich Colfinari, and Rich was my first recruit to Mesa. And Jamie played for me, ended up being an all-conference player and signed a professional contract with the California Angels. And Jamie still holds the minor league record for playing all positions in one game. And that record's probably been there for 15, 20 years, maybe longer. But Jamie came back and coached after he finished his pro career, and did a super job. And now, you know, he's kind of Mr. Baseball in town here with the JUCO and all that. And I get all these guys. I've already talked to Jamie about coming and doing our coaches clinic for Monument Little League. It really is nice for him to do those kinds of things and give back to baseball. You always expect these guys to be doing the things with the advanced high school players or, you know, young junior college players. But to get them back and talk to coaches that have 8-9-year-old kids just beginning their career is a super experience.
Well, and I think it's just remarkable that you have such a love of baseball, Byron. You're still giving of that knowledge to little league players and coaches. And I just think, like you said, coaches never stop coaching, right? Even when you're not maybe coaching college baseball anymore, you're still out there doing some great work and developing young coaches. And I think that's fantastic. I do also want to mention the role you play in the Mile High Intercollegiate Baseball League that you put together over in Denver, because that played a big role in giving college players a chance to get some extra time on the mound and out in the field with that league.
I think I stopped coaching at Mesa. I decided to jump out of the frying pan and get in the fire, and I became a high school principal. And I was in that role for about 7 or 8 years, but still being pretty close to baseball. And after I retired from the principalship, John Barnes, who was the head coach at the University of Southern Colorado and UNC. He and I got together with a couple other baseball people and started the Mile High Collegiate League. And we still wanted to coach, so we started the league so we could coach. And he coached the Greeley Grays, and I coached the Generals. But we ended up getting about nine teams and trying to be an administrator with nine teams and coach. My wife would say, you know, I thought you were retired, and I was doing more with the Mile High League than I was at Mesa. And so it was a great experience, and we got it going, and it's still going to this day. They have a new leadership, but they're still getting 8 to 10 teams, and we had kids come back with a little bit like the Grand Junction team that Sam Saplesio had, and we had kids from San Diego. It was kind of nice because I had a lot of former players at that time that were out as junior college coaches and D1 coaches, and I could make some phone calls and get those guys to bring their kids back to Denver and play on in the Mile High League. And so it was a lot of fun, and but it was pretty tiring. And, you know, you get kind of baseballed out after a while, but you never lose sight of what you're trying to do. And if I didn't do the Monument Little League and work on the fields and coach Little League teams, I don't know what I'd be doing, but probably not have a very long life.
And I'm sure your wife would say, aren't you going to go do something? Why don't you have a team you can go coach? You'd probably say, get out of here. Go work with some kids. Go out there and she'd probably tell you that, right?
That's for sure. You know, you can only do so much around the house. But, you know, if I didn't do this, I'd probably be taking naps and watching soap operas. But I got to be doing something in baseball. You know, if you have a passion for it, it's the best thing. It's therapeutic, and I enjoy what we're doing.
All right, Byron Weehy, he'll go into the Colorado Dugout Club Hall of Fame this Saturday, along with former Maverick pitcher Joe White. Congratulations to those guys. Enjoyed talking with Byron about his career at Mesa College. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back 9:23, and coming up this day in sports history, and some garbage time as well. Text or call us, Chick-fil-A Breakfast Team phone line, 970-242-1340.
Yeah, I think they're like the best on the radio.
At least at the pro level, the best of the best.
The Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader, The Team.
Welcome back, 9:26. Jim along with the Buckeye Boy. Cake will join me tomorrow on the program. We talked about it in the 8 o'clock hour. We said we'd get to it this hour, the article in The Athletic about the best of the destinations for coaches in the NFL right now. Which job is the best one of those open jobs, which of course includes the Denver Broncos. And so they got Stephen Holder, who is the senior NFL writer for The Athletic, along with Lindsey Jones, who also has ties to the state. She used to work for the Denver Post. And Dan Pompey, longtime NFL writer. And Mike Sando. I really like Mike Sando's work. He does a great job. So they had, which job opening is the most appealing? And the consensus seemed to be that the Vikings job is the most appealing of those available right now. And a lot of that has to do with the ownership stability, having a veteran quarterback there, whether you think Kirk Cousins is worth a lick or not.
Yeah.
But you have a veteran quarterback there. You've got some really good pieces, Dalvin Cook, Adam Thielen, Justin Jefferson. Lindsey Jones makes a comment about the stable ownership shows that there's patience with coaches, and they're also willing to invest in the franchise in terms of practice facilities, obviously U.S. Bank Stadium, and well, all the folks in Minnesota helped to pay for that. But there's a willingness to make the franchise better, and they also play in a division that, look, Green Bay. If you can beat Green Bay, which is not an easy thing to do,
right?
You got a good shot at being a playoff team and winning that division. I mean, your biggest rival, your biggest obstacle is Green Bay. Not that obstacle isn't Mount Everest-like, but nobody else in that division is very good. Chicago's not very good. They're looking for a coach. Detroit's not very good.
And there's a lot of bottom feeders in the NFC, right? Every 3 years, you're going to have to play the NFC West. And, you know, if you only are there 2 years, you may not have to worry about it. But you get the NFC East on a rotation. You get the NFC South, which outside of the Bucs can be had really on any given week.
Saints,
there's a place,
depending on what you know, who they have playing quarterback for them.
Even if you don't beat the Packers in your two chances against them, there's some space behind them that you can draft, right? Like NASCAR draft, not NFL draft. That you could just kind of follow them and still make your way into the playoffs. Bears did it a couple times in the last few years. Vikings have done it before. Poor Lions can't get out of their own way sometimes, but there's promise there. Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad one. And on the same side of that coin, you kind of have the Bears, right? They're right there. I don't think they're significantly worse than the Vikings.
And here's the thing, too. Maybe Rodgers stays in Green Bay. Maybe he leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he retires.
Maybe they could be had at some point.
And then all of a sudden, you've got Jordan Love taking over at quarterback, and your chance of winning that division, if you're in Minnesota, just got a whole lot easier.
Right.
Mike Sando does refer, he says Minnesota and Las Vegas. He said Denver could be there near the top as well, but he has concerns about the ownership situation and really more notably the quarterback situation in Denver.
Right. And I would probably put the Raiders at or near the top of that list because they're a playoff team. I mean, none of these other teams made the playoffs. So, you know, their interim head coach got them together. Those are guys that'll fight for somebody if they believe in you, right? And so, I mean, the Raiders have got to be near the top of most desirable because they're a playoff team.
Depending on what happens with the quarterback spot.
Yeah.
When Derek Carr going forward. But, yeah, the Raiders are a team that playoff team. With some certainly some talent there. And I would have the Raiders and the Vikings probably right there, 1A, 1B. And then they had the least appealing. And there was a little bit of a debate about the most appealing, there was no doubt about which one was the least appealing. And that is the Houston Texans.
Even more so than the Giants.
Yes. You have a ton of uncertainty about the Deshaun Watson situation. Even if everything falls into place for Watson and they resolve the civil suits and there's no criminal charges from his accusers and he's able to come back into the league, he doesn't want to be there.
Right.
And do you really think he wants to be there now considering where this team is?
No.
No.
And they are the fourth most talented team in that division. And there's only four teams.
Right.
So they are the least talented team in the AFC South.
And you got the Jags in that division.
Which is the least competitive division in the entire conference. You're at the bottom of the bottom. Yes, you won more games than the Jags. It helps to sweep the Jags. But the Jags are going to be on the upswing. And you're not, really. And you're going to be maybe the worst team in the AFC going forward for a significant stretch. I wouldn't want to go there. If I'm a coach that has a pick, has a choice, if the Texans are the only ones that call me, maybe that's a different story. But if all offers from all eight teams are on the table, that one's getting tossed to the trash. I'm sorry.
And you got to be...
Not that sorry.
You got to be okay with Nick Caserio and Jack Easterby. You know, Caserio with his approach from his time in New England. Easterby's an idiot. Cam McNair's an idiot. And dealing with a front office that maybe you don't have a whole lot of trust in. Their competency level is in question. And so if you're a coach, I guess like I said, if you want to be a first-time head coach, you want that opportunity, okay, you're willing to dive into that pool and and you think that your talent, your ability to coach, will be able to rise a sinking ship. But boy, it doesn't help when you have guys like that there that certainly have, I think, make it a challenge for any head coach, particularly a first-time head coach, to go there and have success. They also have the question, which coaching candidate team fit match you'd love to see? Holder says he'd love to see Eric Bieniemy go to Jacksonville. He thinks that Bieniemy and what he's learned from Andy Reid, working with Trevor Lawrence, that would be a nice combination. After the Urban Meyer situation, though, I just don't have a lot of trust in Eric Bieniemy's ability to be a leader. I hate to say this about him. I just get this sense he's a lifer coordinator or position coach. I just don't see him
Wade
being a head
Phillips,
coach.
Vic Fangio. He's those guys who are much better as coordinators. I would love to see Byron Leftwich take that job.
The more
I've been hearing, the more I've been looking.
Dan Pompey mentions that, by the way. He thinks Leftwich should be great there.
The more I read is, you know, a lot of people are now saying that Leftwich is not in that chicken-egg conundrum that Bieniemy, Hackett, Callahan, you know.
He makes more of his own decisions.
He has a lot more independence on that offense than that Bruce Arians allows him than most other of these candidates who you can't figure out where does the coach and quarterback play into what they develop. And he played there. He's got, you know, he might be able to rally I don't really know if this is accurate, the old Jags fans that would actually fill up that house.
Right.
And I know people aren't going to go to watch a guy coach, but he has a lot more tie to that area, which already struggles to get fans out, than anybody else with that team. You know, a lot of guys signed with Jacksonville because there's a lot of money and there's no state income tax. We saw Malik Jackson for the Broncos leave and go to Jacksonville, and some other guys go to Jacksonville, but they don't stick around for very long once they realize, 4 years and 15 wins is not a lot of fun. And so they go somewhere else. I think Byron Leftwich may be able to kind of reinvigorate the atmosphere around the
team.
He may not help the team the first couple of years, but he may have a little bit longer of a leash. And he might, you know, help get that building a little bit more full just by
goes back to the glory days.
Yeah.
And gives them confidence, gives the fan base hope.
Right.
But kind of like the situation of the Texans, though, Buckeye. Shad Khan, tough to really...
Kind of a dingus.
You're kind of an idiot. Tough to believe that he's going to make the right decision. You kept Trent Baalke, which a lot of guys in the league don't like. And so I could see Leftwich. I think that's a really good fit.
They got cap room and draft picks, though. I mean, if they're bad going forward and if they're not good at some point in the next 5 years, it's going to be on purpose.
Yeah.
And then that's all you need to know about Shad Khan.
Are they trying to tank it there so they can go to London?
I don't know.
I mean, would that be the formula, the plan? Make the fan base angry so they don't want to, those remaining don't show up and we'll see, we're not getting support here now.
Yeah.
We're going to move to London.
I mean, his kids got a lot of hand in that franchise.
But they've got to have two teams in London, though, before that happens. They've got to have two teams.
Right. And I don't know who the second one is. Maybe it's the Texans. Maybe they're in cahoots. Maybe if we go into 2022 and we win a combined 3 games, they'll move us both to London.
Sucking to be the next London silly nannies.
Yeah. So I don't know. I would like Byron Leftwich in that job.
Lindsey Jones has Brian Daboll to Chicago, the Buffalo Bills OC, because feels like he could develop Justin Fields. Look what the job he's done with Josh Allen.
He's turned Mitchell Trubisky into a hot quarterback candidate.
Yeah, that's right. So Mike Sando has Dan Quinn in the Broncos. Thanks, because Peyton and Quinn know each other from their days with the Dolphins, sees them from a ideological standpoint being a good fit.
I don't know about that, because a defense is good. Let's make it more good. offense still sucks. I will find a guy for that. Vic couldn't. You know, I think another defensive head coach, as much as I like Dan Quinn and I think he deserves another opportunity, the more I think about it, it's like, do you really need a defensive-minded head coach? And I will find a guy for offense. You need to find a few guys to play offense. And, you know, one of them should be a head coaching candidate. I don't know who that is, but I don't know why I'm coming off the Dan Quinn train, but I don't know.
I'm not off the Dan Quinn train, but I see your point, though.
Yeah.
That the bones are there. The bones for it was a defense, was the third best scoring defense in the league. You get a competent DC, you're going to be fine. It's the offense that's been the problem.
They got to score points
since they won
too.
The Super Bowl. I mean, they got to score points, and Kisla has a piece today in the Post about, well, if you're just happy with getting to December and playoff football, then Dan Quinn's your guy. If you want more than that, you need to look elsewhere.
And for who exactly, Mark?
No, I didn't read the rest of it this morning. I'll take a quick glance and I'll fill you in.
Who, though? That's the question.
Yeah.
Who else are you going to look? Dan Quinn, he is a Super Bowl winning coordinator. He's been to two others. How many other guys out there that are available have that on their resume?
Yeah, the comment is if you want to play, all you want to do is play meaningful games in December, Dan Quinn's a safe choice as coach. And just kind of, he references when they interviewed Kyle Shanahan and he blew them away in the interview and they didn't hire him.
Not Dan Quinn's fault, but.
Yeah.
Kyle Shanahan's not won anything either if you're going by that standard.
Seems like he's lobbying for Nathaniel Hackett. That seems to be Hackett or Brian Callahan was part of the Broncos staff when they won a championship.
I don't get that argument with, hey, this guy, hey, all he can do is get you to the playoffs. But these guys who have never done it before,
they're going to take you to a Super Bowl. Yeah, I totally agree. Quinn has the experience. They don't. No. I know what you're saying.
For like 6 days there, I was in agreement with Mark Kisla. Now it's nice to be back to a little bit of normalcy where he puts out a stupid column to fill inches because you can't logically hold that opinion because it doesn't make sense.
One of the final things they kicked about in this piece on The Athletic, potential coaching or GM candidate you're intrigued by. Stephen Holder says Raheem Morris, Rams defensive coordinator, one-time Bucks head coach. And there's been some talk that he has earned the opportunity again to be a head coach in this league.
That Rams-Bucks game, first of all, it's 20 years to the day since they last played each other, or 22 years to the day with the Kurt Warner game. All four coordinators could be gone in 3 weeks.
Wow.
Just think about that. Bowles, Leftwich, Morris, and what is Callahan or O'Malley or O'Brien or whatever his name is.
O'Connell,
thank you. I know he was an Irish kid. All four could be head coaches in 3 weeks. From one game, all four coordinators could all be gone.
That's interesting. Yeah, every single one of those guys could be a head coach someplace else.
Yeah.
All right. Holder talked about Raheem Morris. Lindsey Jones, she thinks Jerod Mayo is an interesting candidate because of the association with, obviously, Bill Belichick. Everybody always...
Because that's gone over swimmingly in the past.
He's young. He's 35. So she thinks he's intriguing. Dan Pompey. Says Doug Peterson. Mike Sando, Jim Caldwell. Jim Caldwell, to me, is a sneaky good candidate for a lot of teams because he was actually pretty successful in Detroit.
Yeah.
And got fired because, well, we think we can do better.
How'd that work out?
And then that was dead wrong by the Ford family. Dead wrong. They've been worse since they got rid of Jim Caldwell. Caldwell did a good job in Indianapolis. I'm not saying that Jim Caldwell's the next Tony Dungy or Vic Lombardi, but I think you could go. I don't know if he's the best fit in Denver necessarily, even though they're not interviewing him, so the point is moot. But I tend to think Jim Caldwell would be a good guy for like the Texans, for example, or the Dolphins.
Jim Caldwell, 7 years, a winning percentage of .554. Here's the best part. One, he's a Super Bowl head coach. He didn't win it, but he got to one. 2009, they ended up losing that to the Saints.
Right.
Onside kickoff, not his fault. But with the Colts, 3 years, .542 winning percentage. He was 26 and 22. With the Lions, he was a .563 winning percentage. 11-5, 7-9, 9-7, 9-7.
He got fired after a 9-7 season there.
Back-to-back 9-7 seasons.
Thank you for making my point for me. You could do a lot worse than Jim Caldwell.
And they have. 6-10 the next year. 3-12-1, 5-11, 3-13.
The dumbest thing the Lions could have ever did was fire Jim Caldwell.
Jim Caldwell won 16 games in his first 2 years of Lions head coach. Sorry, 18 games. Take that back. Math is hard. And in the last 4 years, the Lions have won 17.
Yeah.
We could do better.
Really? Did you? No, you didn't.
He got you to the playoffs twice. Yes, you lost both times, but he got you to the playoffs for the Lions. For the Lions.
Right. It's like Jim Moore there. Playoffs? Lions?
This is a team that has gone 0-for, 2 wins, 3 wins, 4 wins, and he has your last two playoff berths. It's like how Mitchell Trubisky sucks. He guided a team to the playoffs twice. Jimmy G sucks. He's
took him to the Super Bowl.
And he's on the verge of getting close again. It's like, you got to realize that just because you aren't wowed by them doesn't mean they're bad.
Doesn't mean that there's not some talent there. There's good things about a Jim Caldwell, a Jimmy Garoppolo,
right,
or a Mitchell Trubisky, which I know every time we mention Trubisky's name, people roll their eyes and go, oh, really? No.
Mitchell Trubisky.
I keep saying this. Change of scenery, right guy, Trubisky. Look, would you rather have Rodgers or Russell Wilson? Absolutely, yes. Okay. Don't start that with me.
Yeah.
But of the other options that are out there right now, because he signed, a one-year deal with the Bills?
I think so, yeah.
He's still relatively young. His athleticism, there are good things. We talk about good bones. Good things, good bones in Mitchell Trubisky's game that if you get the right OC, right coach, maybe Denver's a good spot for him.
Mm-hmm. So Mitchell Trubisky had a 5-game losing streak his first year starting with the Lions. He came out of the gate 2-1.
Bears.
Bears.
That's okay.
Sorry.
You're talking a lot of Lions.
NFC there. North teams that suck. Sorry. I get them confused.
Sounds like a Jeopardy category.
Yeah. So he had that 5-game losing streak. Since then, he is 27-12. 27-13 as a starter. He won 11-3 his second year, 8-7, 6-3. He's never thrown more interceptions than touchdowns. The closest he got was 7-7 as a rookie. If you even want to wash rookie years, because you can do that, because not all rookies are great. 24-12, 17-10, 16-18 for Mitchell Trubisky. Again, he's not blowing your pants off. Doesn't mean he's just straight up bad.
That maybe, like I said, with the right OC, right head coach, he's going to have talent around him in Denver.
Yep.
You're going to be able to get him on the cheap, possibly. Then why wouldn't you, if the other plans don't work out, stop talking yourself into, Aaron Rodgers is coming. Stop that. What if he doesn't? What if he doesn't come to Denver? What if Russell Wilson doesn't come to Denver? What are you going to do then? Is Kenny Pickett going to be better than Mitchell Trubisky? I don't know. He might be. He might be vastly better.
But he might not be.
Right now, who would you rather have, Drew Lock or Mitchell Trubisky?
Trubisky?
I'll take Trubisky. He's got to the playoffs twice. He's never had more interceptions than touchdowns. Stop crapping on a guy that could potentially be an answer for your football team. Just because, I don't know, he played for the Bears. I wasn't that impressed. The numbers say otherwise.
Right. Just because you're not impressed doesn't mean it's bad. That speaks more to your classification.
Yeah. Like I said, the other two options would be fantastic.
Mm-hmm. But 7 game-winning drives, 5 fourth quarter comebacks for Mitchell Trubisky.
But if you're looking around the available guys right now, Matt Ryan's going to be tough to get because of the cap money, right. The dead cap,
but
or
again,
the dead money.
It's available quarterback.
Right.
Matt Ryan's under contract to the Falcons.
Right.
That's not quote-unquote available.
Just like Rodgers.
Wilson.
Same guys. They're still under contract.
Yeah. You know, so available quarterbacks.
Trubisky's deal is done after this year.
They're different than your dream list of quarterbacks.
And are you that sold on Drew Lock? Do you go, oh, got the answer. Look how Drew played at the end of the season.
There's some guys that are, though.
He looked better. I'll grant him that. He looked better. But are you comfortable just saying, yep, this is the time for Drew Lock? Without any kind of competition coming in.
I await the Russell Wilson acquisition, and he goes into camp as the definitive starter with Drew Lock as his backup and getting the text of, well, you know, I mean, Russ is 34. Really doesn't have it. Can't push the ball down the field. You know, he just scrambles way too much. But Drew Lock, man, one more year could just be the year. Because you know we're going to get one of those.
Oh, you bet. What are they doing? They had to give up so much to get him.
That was dumb. You're not setting yourself up for the future. That's always make me fall asleep in a lullaby. Those texts.
You're right about that.
It's just so
okay. We're way behind here. Very quickly.
That's all right.
This day in sports history, 1950 NFL draft. Leon Hart from the University of Notre Dame picked first by the Lions. 1952, the NBA's first superstar George Mikan. He had the Mikan drill. Scores a career high 61 points to lead the Minneapolis Lakers to a 91-81 double overtime victory over the Rochester Royals. Also on this day, 40 years ago. Was when then President Jimmy Carter said we would not send a Olympic team to the Moscow Games if the Soviet Union did not withdraw from Afghanistan. And that's this day in sports. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back and wrap things up.
Craptastic.
That's just crap.
The team presents the Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader, the team.
All right, welcome back. Jim along with the Buckeye Boy. Quickly on the text line. Got one from Rock, Triple Play Records downtown.
Hey, nice.
Hope you and Kendra and the family have a good weekend. Thank you, Rock. Appreciate that.
Well, what about my weekend, Rock?
I don't know. Well, we both have a wife named Kendra.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that's part of it. You're close with Karen.
Yeah.
But Rocks, I think Trubisky would be a great add. You don't have to give up any draft picks. So you can add to that talented roster to support them. Very good. Let's see. Laurea Jones?
Yes.
Laurea, she wanted the answer to the question.
Yes, it was Trevor Price. Played for the Broncos and the Jets. The only two teams to not make the playoffs in the last 5 years.
All right, very good. All right, that's our show for today. So coming up tomorrow, we hope to have Joe White, former Mesa pitcher, who is going into the Colorado Baseball Dugout Club Hall of Fame this weekend with Byron Weehee. So we hope to have Joe on the program tomorrow. Also trying to track down Palisade wrestling coach Tanner Ridgeway. Also some other surprises tomorrow as well. Cake will be here. That's no surprise. So he'll be here with Where in the World is Tyler Franzen, which I hate to tell you this, man. It's become my new favorite game.
It doesn't really sound like you hate to tell me that. It sounds like you take joy.
No, I do. I think it's genius what he's come up with. It's absolute genius.
Whoa. Pump your brakes there, Chief.
It's fantastic. Pyle loves it. I love it. I look forward to every Friday to play that game, which we'll play tomorrow. Join us at 7 tomorrow on the team.